When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This week on Underdogs, we talk NFL free agency with an agent.
And we look at potential college basketball national champions not named Purdue, UConn, or Houston.
The cry goes up both far and near for Underdog. Underdog.
Countdown going on right now. Morrow, up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. You believe in miracles? Yes!
By George, the dream is alive.
Underdog.
And I guess there's only one thing left to do. Win the whole fucking thing.
It's the Underdogs back with you. I'm Jordan Brenner, joined as always by my co-host, Peter Keating. Happy March, Peter.
Happy March, Jordan. Are you feeling mad?
I am. You know why? Because a special sleeper in college basketball has already emerged. I'm not talking about Division One, Peter. I'm talking about in the Division Three tournament, the mighty Tufts Jumbos are into the Jumbos. Sweet 16. Upsetting NYU last weekend. The elephant is roaming. We take on Trinity, who's, I believe, 26-1 next. Big matchup on Friday. But if you're into NCAA tournament upsets, Tufts is your team.
So your alma mater is steamrolled NYU and is on the way to facing Trinity. Just want to make sure I have that right.
Yes. And of course, Tufts is in Boston. We'll get to the Division One, the tournament that people care about in a little bit, but we're going to start off with a little bit of NFL. Free agency period is about to begin, and as I mentioned, Tufts is in Boston, and joining us on the call is an NFL agent. Joe Linta is the president of JL Sports. He represents 51 different players, Joe Flacco, Kyle Juszczyk, and a lot of unheralded guys who are perfect for the Underdogs podcast. And Joe right now is joining us from his car, where he's going to check out a Division II prospect in Boston. So, Joe, how's the grind? How are you doing today?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me here.
Thanks for joining us, Joe. So you're on a scouting trip right now, is that right? An evaluation trip?
Yeah, we're going up to Bentley College outside of Boston. And, you know, we got wind of a kid about a week and a half ago or so that really passed muster on tape. Loved the kid, the way he played. And, you know, checked around the NFL. Nobody knows about him. He's not on any list. And it's a very inexact science, scouting. And, you know, I'm kind of like a shopper at a shoe store with these guys. I really, you know, like to find the underdogs. And, you know, we had a kid 2 years ago from Framingham State who's now playing for the Seahawks. Last year, a kid from Princeton who was left for dead in the scouting process. So, you know, it's kind of fun for me to dig up these guys and, you know, have them live their dream and be a part of that. You know, my own son went to the Chiefs a couple of years ago as a unheralded guy coming out of Wagner College. So I just like to be a part of these kids getting a chance to live their dream, regardless of whether you, you know, make money off them or not.
So what's your process like in terms of finding, unearthing these gems? Obviously, we do our entire show on Underdogs, so you're speaking our language. How do you find guys who others don't? And how is that sort of similar in your role to being as if you were a personnel guy for a team?
Very similar. I'm very fortunate. I also coach football. I'm a head coach of a private school around Connecticut where I live, Hampden Hall Country Day. So, you know, we have a lot of good players, D1 players on my team. So I get a lot of traffic of college coaches. I've developed a pretty good network of coaches throughout the country. I actually used to coach at Yale 100 years ago when Lincoln was president. So I've had a lot of connections in the coaching business. And, you know, a coach will call me up and say, hey, have you looked at our linebacker? And regardless of what the scouts say in the NFL, you know, we still take a look. And, you know, the most important grade for me is mine and what, you know, our staff here comes up with, not necessarily what some scout from a team says.
Joe, where's that confidence come from? Was it just enough early success, or is it you see problems or flaws or overconfidence in traditional scouting? I mean, you say you're getting wind of a guy at Bentley. Exactly what makes you think it's going to be worth it, even if it's, you know, a one in however many shot, to go out there and give somebody like that a look?
If he gets his chance and he gets signed to an NFL team and he gets to go to mini camp and training camp and he gets cut and he never makes a nickel, I still feel a sense of fulfillment that I helped the kid get his chance. It's not always about money all the time. Of course, you want to make a lot of money and have a big house and two dogs and, you know, that type of thing. But it's most important for me to be help these kids live their dreams. You know, of course, you want to represent first, second round picks that make Pro Bowls and whatnot. But these are kids are just, you know, they don't have a voice sometimes. I know I sound like some, God is trying to change the world here. But, you know, it's just fun for me. It really is. This is not work. Like, I'm not going to call my wife after this and say, oh, my God, I had a tough day at work, honey. I mean, I love doing this. It's really fun for me.
So this time of year, free agency, you're representing a lot of guys who maybe aren't the top tier free agent, shall we say. What's your process like with your guys? You know, maybe you're representing a backup defensive tackle or a guy who excels on special teams. What kind of calls are you making right now? How are you finding your next spot for your guys?
The upper level guys get calls when you have somebody who's already established starter and is coming up on free agency, which that window of negotiation starts on Monday. But what you do is when you go out to Indy to the combine, which we just came back from there on Monday, you'll meet with the existing teams a lot of times. Hey, is there a place for this kid going forward? And if so, like Joe Flacco with Cleveland, perfect example, sat down with those guys, had a really good meeting with those guys. And I know these guys over the years. So it's not like, you know, a lot of media will say, oh, he's begun negotiations or what. It's just sitting down. Hey, you want the guy back? Joe loves it in Cleveland. Let's see if we can make it work. And if not, there's no hard feelings. It's not always adversarial. Some guys on the team side will make it adversarial, but I don't look at it that way.
Well, let's talk about Joe for a second, because that was as good a story as there was in football this year. And now at 38, 39, where's his mindset? He's clearly that you mentioned he likes it in Cleveland. That's a place where he's comfortable. They do have a starter in Deshaun Watson. Is it more important for a guy like that to be comfortable at this point in his career, or is it to get one more shot to be the guy somewhere?
I mean, obviously everybody wants to play, but wherever he would go as a potential starter would probably be a bridge guy. So for example, he goes to a team like Patriots, let's say. Mm-hmm. He goes there. They're probably going to draft somebody with the third pick or so the speculation is. He becomes a bridge starter, and eventually that other guy's going to play. And if they lose the first three games and he's playing, even if it's not his fault, so he knows that that time is probably limited. And what's important for him now is to enjoy the process, enjoy the coaches. He loved it out there. It's not, I mean, he's made a lot of money, as everyone knows. So he is more interested in the experience, the enjoyment, going to work every day. And, you know, he loved it out there. He loved the guys on the team. He loved the town. Kevin Stefanski's a really good guy. I know Kevin a bit. And just, it's a good fit for him there.
You think he would have enjoyed the coaches and the process in New York if he had come to the Jets and stayed? I mean, they've done that. they had him. They had a chance to keep him. And he must be thanking his lucky stars for reasons of escape as well as reasons of opportunity.
Yeah, there's a mixed bag in that building there. But there's a lot of, from a standpoint of Joe, there's a lot of people that really would have wanted him there. I don't want to get into the particulars of it because it'll go viral if I say the wrong thing. But the truth of the matter is everybody in the world knows that he should have been there. And he wasn't, and it wasn't, you know, there was no hard feelings. It is what it is. You know, when you get old like Joe and older like me, you understand these things.
Is it as clear cut a situation in terms of what influence Aaron Rodgers has on the decision-making process there? Is it as it seems from a little bit away?
Obviously he has some influence in the building. It sounds like to me, and again, like I said, I'll just leave it at, you know, okay. It's an interesting situation.
Got it. All right, let's shift for a minute. The running back market right now is obviously sort of the most interesting topic in general. I'm curious on your thoughts about, you know, it seems like people are complaining that running backs aren't being paid more, but the market is what it is, right? So how do you read that as an agent? And I don't know whether you represent any running backs who are looking to get a new deal this year, but how do you sort of see the way that position's evolved and what teams are willing to offer right now?
I don't really agree with it. I think, you know, when you have a running back that can be very successful running the ball, as well as a 30, 40, 50, 60 catch guy in the pass game, I don't know why they're being devalued. And maybe that's because some of them, you know, the thought is that they're going to get hurt eventually. They're going to wear down, only so much tread on the tires. But I don't necessarily agree with it. I mean, Kyle Juszczyk is, you know, people always say, well, he's got the biggest contract ever at his position. Well, he's worth it. I mean, if he's going to catch 30, 40, 50 balls and run the ball the way he does on it, he's a bargain at what he's making. But, you know, they're looking at a lot of running backs in the draft. If you all followed the combine, we had probably the best running back out there, the kid from Louisville, Isaac Garendo, ran a 4.33 at 221 pounds. So he went from afterthought to shooting right up the boards now because of his amazing physical ability. So that becomes like, okay, do we draft a guy like him in the third, fourth round and put him in as our bell cow guy, or do we take the guy at $12 million a year and hope we get a couple of years out of him? Because when you get to be 27, 28 years old, you start signing a 3-4-5 year deal. Now you're the wrong side of 30, and then the money becomes more difficult to swallow.
Well, I think that's it, right? You see more than any other position, the drop-off comes fast there. It seems to me what really hurts running backs the most is the rookie salary scale. That
yes,
these guys' most valuable yeah. years are right when they come into the league. They don't need as big a learning curve, except maybe in pass pro. And I always wondered if the union did right by its players in agreeing to the rookie salary scale, because in football, your career is so front loaded. I'm just curious your thoughts on that, whether it could ever be collectively bargained back into something that's more favorable to the players. You know, what are your thoughts there?
The union is never going to keep everybody happy because everyone has an agenda. Everyone's got their, you know, so the union does a good job of trying to do the best for the collective group. And I think the rookies, what they did a great job with is the rookies bumping their minimum salaries up fairly well over the course of the CBA. I think that's a really good thing for these young guys. But you take a guy like the running back I just mentioned, our guy's going to get drafted and get a 4-year contract. So if he becomes a good player the first, second year, they've got him locked up for a couple of years at cheap price, and they can move on. But it's a free market. I mean, it's to some extent, it's a free market. I don't know why it's being devalued, but it shouldn't be, but it is. And that's the way the market forces into play. But when they start saying that there should be a salary scale for running backs, I don't really agree with that. It's the market takes care of the pricing.
Joe, you mentioned the combine. Let me ask you, is there some common trait to a lot of the undervalued guys you find? Is there something that NFL teams routinely overlook, or that if a player's got it, he's more valuable than he seems? Is it intelligence? Where do you find the hidden talents lying or clustering, if anywhere?
Heart, head, and a trait. For example, 2 years ago, we were up here at a football powerhouse, Framingham State, which is a Division III school. And, you know, we caught wind of this kid through a friend. The friend said, hey, I have a friend whose son plays at Framingham State. You should take a look at him. We did. I watched his film from an airport. I remember like it was yesterday. I was like, oh, my God, this guy's really good. So we got back from our trip, loaded up our Yugo, and drove up to Boston and worked him out. And everything was – I got done with the workout. And I'm like, there's no way this guy's not an NFL player. And I just get on the roof and start yelling his name. And, you know, I only need one of 32 teams to agree with me. So if 31 teams thinks that he sucks, that's fine, as long as one likes him.
So who is that, and what's he doing now?
His name is Josh Anogiogu, and he plays for the Seahawks right now. He's a pass rusher.
There we go.
Jordan, I don't know about you. It makes me very happy to hear that in this day of automation, machine learning, super advanced, you know, advanced analytics, that word of mouth evaluation going out, beating the bushes can still pay off.
100%. And Peter, I don't know about you. I could talk to Joe about this for an hour. Unfortunately, we got to move on to our other key topic in March, the NCAA tournament coming soon. But Joe, thank you so much for joining us. Happy hunting out there. I hope Bentley produces all sorts of hidden gems for you. And don't be a stranger, okay?
Well, I'll send you guys a souvenir from the Bentley gift shop.
Yeah, please.
Love it.
Please
we'll add it to our collection.
We'll wear Bentley t-shirts anytime, Joe. Thank you. Thank you for coming on. We'd love to keep talking with you.
Thanks, guys.
Underdog. Underdog.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
Underdog, underdog.
We're back with you. We are 10, 11 days away from Selection Sunday. We've got a lot of awesome stuff coming up on the show. We're going to do a Bractacular special.
Madness Bractacular. We've got picks, and they are Bractacular.
An hour-long special the day after Selection Sunday. We'll be doing our usual bracket breaker stuff both here and at The Athletic, using our special model to predict NCAA tournament upsets, which we do better than anyone. But we're going to try a little different. Normally, we look at the underdogs. Today, we're going to talk about some of the favorites and who you should be zeroing in on as potential national title contenders outside of, look, there's sort of a clear top three right now, right? Who are definitely going to get number one seeds and are sort of the odds on favorites.
Although, Jordan, who's one of them?
Well, it's UConn, Purdue.
Yes.
And Houston.
I don't think we can call Purdue a safe pick, but the markets are speaking. Right.
So we're going to look beyond those three favorites who have the shortest odds at DraftKings and identify a couple other teams that might be worth placing a futures bet on now. And Peter, the two things I want to say up at the top are, one, picking a national championship is very different than picking a Final Four. Okay. Final Four, you do get weird teams in there. You do get teams you didn't see coming. National champions, it's a big difference winning 4 games in a row and 6 games in a row. And when you look at the list of past national champions, they are almost always teams that have been fantastic all season long. Okay. You have to go back to 2014 to find a team that won a national championship and wasn't ranked in the top 6 in KenPom going into the tournament. 2014, you had UConn, which was 25th. That's pretty much the only fluky team since 2010, except the other UConn team in 2011, which was 15th. Right. Otherwise, you're looking, if you're going back starting last year, 4th, 6th, 4th, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 5th, 6th. they're not coming out of nowhere. These are the best teams. And then the other trend we've seen a little
Jordan, there's a mathematical, simple mathematical reason for that. People think you win four games, you're capable of winning six. It is literally exponentially harder to win six than four. It doesn't get any easier. It gets harder as it goes along. And so, you know, by that time, anyone who's kind of a quirk is not just very likely, but exceptionally likely to be eliminated.
The other interesting thing, at least since 2017, when Carolina won, teams have been better on offense than defense. Mm-hmm. So if you look at it, KenPom, that 2017 Carolina team was ranked fourth in adjusted offensive efficiency, 25th in defense. Villanova the next year, first on offense, 22nd defense. Virginia actually was better offensively, even though they're known for their defense. They were second offensively, fifth defensively. Baylor is one to really think about as we talk about a couple of these teams in a minute. Third offensively, 44th defensively. Uh-huh. Kansas, sixth and 29th. And last year, UConn entered the tournament sixth in offensive efficiency, 18th in defense. So now that that's out of the way, Peter, where are you starting to head as you look for an underdog champion?
I'm starting with a team that's likely a two seed. So I don't know how much of an underdog you can call them, but I'm looking at Iowa State. Jordan, we have seen, we just said the teams have tended to win with more with offense than defense. But Jordan, we've seen this team build from almost literally having no wins at all just a few years ago to having a championship level defense, to adding around that, to doing the other things you need to do to win games. You know, they rebound now. They shoot well now. The backcourt is astounding. It's not just that they have a good defense. Their defense is astounding at doing the number one thing that helps you at this time of year, which is disrupting the other team by forcing live ball turnovers. Jordan, Iowa State forces steals on 15.3% of opponent possessions. There are more than 60 teams in the country that don't force total turnovers on that percentage of possessions. It is astounding. In their second most frequently used lineup, Iowa State puts four guys on the court at the same time who force steals on more than 3% of opponent possessions. They just do not let anyone else get into any kind of rhythm. They are plus 2,000. Our model says they're the sixth best team in the country. They're number 10 on KenPom right now. And what I've tried to do is find giants or overdogs, favorites that are very safe from upsets, while at the same time playing a gambling style, winning, building possessions and winning the possession game. Those gambling giants are the ones, again, I know we're picking national champion, but not a Final Four, but teams like Syracuse in 2016, teams that could force a lot of possessions, took a lot of threes, maybe were a little bit underseeded, yet still very safe from underdogs themselves, are the kinds of teams that can pull upsets and sneak into a championship game.
Iowa State
fits that profile.
Here's my thing with Iowa State, okay? If you're relying on turnovers for offense, that's going to catch up to you in a six-game stretch. And right now, again, they rank 63rd in offensive efficiency. They don't shoot it well. And it just, I don't know, against a really good team, I don't know that they can survive.
All right, well, I have two quick things to say about that. One is, look, if you just look at top seeds and really strong, powerful teams who are, you know, build possessions through offensive rebounds and who also shoot well, who are physically superior and who also gamble a little and open the game up a little, and you don't look for value, well, then Houston's going to be your top team. But Houston's the top team in the country. We all know that already. Who plays like Houston,
have to look for a team that plays that style to win a national championship. I feel like you're confusing what we look for in rounds.
But you might have to do that to find an undervalued team that's going to win a national championship. Also, Jordan, as they say where I come from, not for nothing, but Houston, Kansas, Texas, TCU, Texas Tech, Oklahoma, what do they all have in common? Iowa State's already beaten them. Houston. So Iowa State plus 2,000.
I think you're confusing what I'm saying. Iowa State's good enough to beat anyone on a given day. I don't think they have the profile that's going to win six straight games. It's different. So who do I think can win six straight games? Well, if you're looking at this trend in good offensive teams doing well, keep an eye on Baylor as they grow through the course of the season. They're fifth in the nation in offense, only 74th in defense, okay? So we got to watch them in the Big 12 tournament, see if the defense comes together a little more. But man, can they score? They've got scoring all over the place. Ray J. Dennis, I love his game. It's like a throwback post-up point guard style. Jacoby Walter has been everything he was hyped to be as a freshman and more. Jalen Bridges shoots it well. Jaden Nunn. Yves Missi is a terrific influence inside. They can score with anyone. I saw them at the Garden against Duke. They didn't even play that well that day, and they were right in it to the end. And most importantly, they're plus 3,000 to win a championship. So there's some value there. Along the same lines, Auburn. Auburn's plus 2,200. Again, team that the metrics love. They're 13th in adjusted offense, 5th in adjusted defense. They're incredibly, incredibly deep. They just are constantly rotating 9-10 guys. Jani Broome is a National Player of the Year candidate. Look, they've had some tough losses late in the season, Florida, Kentucky, Tennessee. But I'm curious to watch them again in the tournament. And what's fun about that is they may be falling down to like a 4 seed. So you might get some real leverage on your folks in a bracket pool if you take them to win.
All right, so Jordan, speaking of 4 seeds and speaking of teams with better offenses, I'm going to try to satisfy you with this next pick, who I think I like as a value pick even more than Iowa State, and that's Alabama at plus 2,800.
I hate this pick so much.
Well, you have recency bias. You're looking at the wrong numbers. Number one, they are one of the most smart shooting teams in the country. We see this with Nate Oates' teams. They're very analytically driven. They're fantastic three-point shooters, but they're also shooting almost 58% from inside. As a result, combined with their offensive rebounding, they got the best offense in the country. Jordan, 127.5 points on an adjusted basis per 100 possessions.
Oh, Peter, they can score on anyone. They can't stop you. What are the numbers? 117, but, 81, and 105.
No, but Jordan, that's...
No, listen, just answer my question.
The reason
what do they mean?
The reason why the defensive stats don't look good and the reason why they're undervalued at plus 2,800 is because of a recent collapse in their defensive efficiency against SEC opponents in the past few games. What is that traceable to? Well, on February 10th, Latrell Wrightsell went 6-for-9 on threes against LSU, who Alabama wiped out, but he had suffered a head injury. Since then, Mark Sears and Aaron Estrada, who have taken all of the duties in the backcourt, okay, have averaged 38.8 and 37 minutes a game, and Alabama has looked terrible. They are fatigued. They have no legs. They're not getting back on defense, and then lost the spring in their step on three-point shooting, too, which is why they went 5-for-23 against Florida. Now he's back. Now they have time to rest. They have to beat Arkansas. Then they get 3 days off. They are a tired team at the end of the season because they have had no depth since Wrightsell got injured, but he is coming back.
Latrell Wrightsell is not responsible for the fact that Alabama's defense has been terrible all year.
Playing guys 40 minutes a game is a big part.
Lots of teams play guys 40 minutes a game and they don't give up 117 points in a game. Alabama just does not have the defense to win 6 straight games.
Jordan, make up your mind. If you're looking for somebody on offense, I gave you one.
Yeah, I'm looking for someone
for somebody on offense, great at offense, defense, who's also undervalued. Joe, go. Put all your money on Houston and Purdue.
No, thank you.
Hopefully, Arizona or UConn pull through big for you, Jordan, and you can be happy with your uniformly dominant statistics.
Thank you for the segue. I mean, I was pointing out that you're looking for a great offensive team that plays solid defense, not horrible defense, but thank you. Is there an undervalued team that fits that bill? Why, yes. And their name is, say it with me,
St. Mary's
Blue Devils.
Is it St. Mary's? I'd rather have St. Mary's than Duke. They're a couple of points worse and a much better value bet, and they're never overrated like Duke is.
I'm going to say a couple things about Duke because I know it's going to, you know, I'll have to be taken with a grain of salt.
Will you be upset when Duke gets a 3 seed, or will you be happy?
Duke is 7th in the nation in offense, 22nd in defense. The biggest thing about Duke is for the second straight year, they are getting better and better and better as the season goes along. Last year, they were peaking going into the tournament. Then Mark Mitchell got hurt and they got manhandled physically by Tennessee. This team, if you watch them,
What evidence is there that teams that play well heading into conference tournaments do better in the NCAA tournament?
Seth Greenberg, I think, was going to have an orgasm watching them last game.
Oh, good Lord.
Couldn't even contain himself.
Now it's going to take me until Latrell Wrightsell comes back at full strength to get over that image.
I just want you to watch them. I've never seen a
serious
Duke team,
editing to do, Jordan.
I've never seen a Duke team move the ball this well. They have shooting all over the court. The key is, can they get Caleb Foster back for the tournament? Because they've now found Sean Stewart off the bench, who's a force on the boards. This team has depth, versatility, and is very well coached. So at plus 2,200, there's a lot of value there.
But you know what else
there's a lot of value in?
Peter? A Duke-Alabama final would be so fun.
Well, for our executive producer, Neely Lohman, we would.
In particular.
Peter, are you willing to fly Neely out and get her tickets if it's that championship game? Neely, of course, a Duke alum who's from Alabama.
I'm willing to watch the game with Neely, and I'll get her to wherever she needs to be to watch it with me. I don't think I'm flying anybody out, including myself.
All right, so there you had it.
I don't know, though.
Underdogs.
I feel very put on the spot with this, Jordan.
There you have it. Underdogs watch party with Neely Lohman. All our listeners are invited if it's Duke, Alabama. Until then, I'm Jordan. That's Peter. Get ready for the madness. The Underdogs Podcast is a production of Meadowlark Media and the DraftKings Network. Our show is produced by Sarah McCrory. Our executive producer is Neely Lohman. Follow us on Twitter at PeterKeatingNJ and at Jordan Brenner. Tell a friend and subscribe to the Underdogs Podcast anywhere you like to listen, and be sure to tune in again next week.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.